Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. The appeal of small-town living to some is the very thing that drives other people away, the very close connections to your neighbors. That is, while the sense of community can be very strong, it's also difficult to live with a secret when everyone knows everyone else. That was a tension Melanie Hoffert felt growing up on a farm near the tiny town of Windmere, North Dakota, and felt even after she left for the big city of Minneapolis. Hoffert knew from a young age that she was gay, but never felt able to discuss it with those closest to her. So when she felt a pull to return home, her inner conflict came back to the surface. Hoffert describes it as a prairie silence, which she describes in her new memoir of the same name. The book comes out today and also explores what's happening to shrinking, isolated rural communities across the upper Midwest. She joins us now via Skype. Melanie Hoffert, it's very nice to meet you.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Can you explain what first drove you away from the North Dakota community where you grew up, and then what drew you back?
I would say I wasn't necessarily driven away, but me leaving was a very natural progression for many kids my age. So you graduate, many of us go to college, and then go on to, you know, different parts of the world, most typically cities, and off to jobs. So it wasn't that I was driven away. I always sort of expected that I would be leaving because there wasn't really much for me to do there. So that's why I left. And in terms of being drawn back, I had lived away from North Dakota and the farm and my small town for, you know, several years, over 10 years. And I started to really miss that way of life. I missed harvest. I missed, you know, the grain trucks. And I actually had, and I wrote about this, just fantasies about driving a grain truck, which I thought was odd, and listening to AM radio and reconnecting with the community. So it was almost like this emotional yearning to return to what I had known my entire life, which I have not been able to find in the city, which is that sort of sense of community and place and a very strong connection to the land.
But of course, it was not just simply as easy as, okay, I'll go back and everything will be everything will be the same.
Right. It wasn't easy at all. My route back was to take a month off of work and to, you know, just really explore what's it like to be home during harvest? What's it like to live in the middle of nowhere and not have all the modern conveniences, etc.? And of course, in my book, I read a lot about how I have stayed away from my hometown because I happen to be gay. And it was the strangest thing, and I wrote a lot about this, and it's one of the things that drove me to write in the first place, but I couldn't seem to reconcile the silence that I felt when I went home to North Dakota around the people who loved me the most and raised me and knew me my entire life, which when you're from a rural community, everybody knows everybody, and they, you know, they keep tabs on you, and they track you, and so while I am very comfortable in my everyday life with my colleagues, with people I meet, when I would go home, I would just completely go silent, and it was physically impossible for me to talk and to tell the truth. And so that was something that I sort of went home to explore. Why is that? And how can I break out of that silence?
What do you think your ultimate fear was? I mean, here you were in a situation mm-hmm. where you didn't even really feel comfortable talking with your family.
Yeah.
Did you at some level worry that talking and not being accepted would be worse than just not talking at all?
I think ultimately that's what it is. I think there is this deep-seated fear of judgment that I have. And I also think that when you carry a secret for, you know, 19, 20 years, which I did the first part of my life, you become very conditioned around particular people to not talk. And so it was maybe an irrational fear, but it was a very, very real fear. And the thing that I started to wonder about and explore in the book and when I was home is whether or not this fear is beyond me, meaning is it a fear that other people have when you grow up again in a place where everybody knows everybody, and to reveal things about your life, those things then become who you are, that you carry them with you. So I almost wonder and still wonder if that's part of the reason that I carried the silence back home.
It almost seems like being gay and the secret were two different things.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. like I said, I knew intellectually, particularly with my family, that there would be unconditional love. But the secret and the silence just had me, and still do, to be honest. I mean, this upcoming book launch, it's very strange in ways, because most people would be thrilled, excited, happy. And while I am all of those things, I am actually terrified about the book being in the world.
Now, you knew from a very early age that you were attracted to women, and you were actually able to describe when that revelation struck you and also how it struck you, because I think, as you describe it, it happens somewhat before we think of romantic attractions to people. Can you give us some insight about that moment?
Sure. In the book, I wrote about being at my farm in a tree. And in the tree, I had this very strong sense that I was drawn to love, for whatever reason, another woman. Like that, it was almost a spiritual or an emotional energy, and it had very little to do with, well, it had nothing to do with sex. It had nothing to do with like a physical urge. It was about the sense of beauty and love and connection to another human. And I just had the sense that it was a woman. And so that was my revelation very early on, age 4. And I carried it with me, you know, throughout all of my years, even though I did everything that one would do, date boys, you know, have crushes, everything on the outside, you know, went as it should in a small town. But internally, I had this very strong emotional affinity towards women, and I knew that I was different, which is why it's interesting, because I actually sort of have a problem with language, you know, this notion of like homosexuality and sex being such the primary understanding of how people are different in this way. I think that that's secondary for me in terms of being emotionally and spiritually connected to another human. Sex is, like I said, secondary.
Well, and it seems within the framework of, you know, growing up in an ostensibly typical way, even as you carry this with you, you were always drawn to people who were also just a little bit different from the norm.
That's right. Particularly my growing up, my best friend, who was very outspoken and outgoing and had dreams and visions beyond small town North Dakota and was a perfectionist and did everything and traveled. And I was very, very drawn to that, that way of thinking and being. And this is something I also thought a lot about when I was writing, how my secret that I carried, it forced me into this constant contemplation about the world as I understood it. So in other words, here's the world playing out in front of me, but I know that there's something different going on inside of me. So presumably there's something, another story going on with all of these other people. And so I think, I mean, part of the gift of me, you know, feeling different was the fact that I've not ever taken anything at face value. And I've always considered other people's perspectives and tried to understand, you know, where they're coming from, knowing that their life experience or their internal lives might be very different for good reason. And so I think that, that was definitely something that has helped me in life to be empathetic.
Well, and you write at length about this unrequited love that you had for your best friend.
Yes.
And what strikes me is that it is as heartbreaking as any unrequited first love.
Yes.
But because of its circumstances, it must have been especially hard to feel like you couldn't talk about it with anyone.
Yes. And it's a pretty common story that I've shared with friends who have had similar experiences, meaning when you're growing up and in high school, everybody goes through the heartache of, you know, falling in love. And then for whatever reason, you then get your heart broken. But you have your family to talk to and to tease you and to bug you about it. And you have your friends and you have like everybody there as part of the dramatic storyline. But when, for me and for others, I dealt with the heartbreak in silence, and it also wasn't a teenage crush. It was my best friend and I were incredibly close for years and years and years. It was a very heartfelt, close relationship. We are still close today, and I love her dearly. But at the time, I, you know, really had feelings for her, and when she dated a boy, as I write about in the book, it was a very hard, raw, emotional, painful experience. Probably one of the most painful moments of my life, looking back at it. So yeah, I think it was very challenging.
Well, and she was what drew you into the world of religion more than mm-hmm. just, you know, going to the stereotypical small town Lutheran church. And I think it seems a lot of people turn to religion for this sense of community. Do you think mm-hmm. in part was that why you were both drawn to it and like your hometown, drawn away from it?
Yes, I think so. So my best friend, in the book I write about how she sort of discovered Christian music and went through this phase of, you know, being a born-again Christian. And for me, God and Christianity was something that I was drawn to in a much more quiet, subdued way, just from like the early ways that I understood how life worked. There's God and God loves you, etc. So when she started to get really involved in that world, I was very drawn to it, again, for this craving for depth and for trying to make meaning of the world and for all of the reasons that many people are drawn in. And so we became very much two teenage, you know, missionaries in our small town, you know, very judgmental of everybody else who had this quiet faith and just went to church on Sunday and didn't talk about Jesus and God during the week. And, you know, I write about how over time I have now very, very different thoughts about religion and God and the way that I recognize my spirituality. But I think because of her affinity towards it, it was a natural way for me to explore something that I was curious about anyway and to express myself.
You mentioned how you're sort of able to keep track of parallel worlds, if you will, in, mm-hmm. in your outlook. The whole time you're back in North Dakota, you are also in this book chronicling the sort of parallel story of what has been happening to the small town Midwest of mm-hmm. your childhood. Why was it important for you to chronicle that story at the same time you were telling your own story?
For me, the piece of my story that feels sad or unresolved is the fact that I left, even though I love this place and under different circumstances maybe would have made a life there. But I left. I can't recreate that in the city, and I can't recreate that in my life traveling around for my job. It's just such a different way of life. And so I wanted to understand, well, why is that? And so in the book, I do this, I create for myself a small town tour where I spend a day driving around, spending time in these small towns that, you know, some have 20 people, some have 100 people. All of them at one point in time were bustling centers of activity with many more people and buildings and churches and everything else. And today there's not a whole lot going on there. So for me, it was important because I'm sad. I guess I'm sad about it, and I wish that it was different. But I also recognize that it probably won't change. There's a Facebook site called, you know, The Ghosts of North Dakota, and it chronicles all of these small towns that no longer exist. They're just abandoned buildings, and so it. To me, is a bit of a slow death. I think that it's never going to be reversed. And part of me wanted to just be there and experience these places that I love. And another part of me wanted to tell the story and to capture it because I don't think it's going to be people's experience in the future, living in small towns and having that sense of community that I did growing up.
So you're telling that story to the world. You're also obviously telling your own story to the world. But mm-hmm. by the end of the book, you were telling your own story to your community. What did you find was the reaction when you finally started to talk about yourself and who you are?
Yeah, so there are a couple of meetings that I write about in the book where I – one in particular with my babysitter who I was close to when I grew up, and she actually lives outside of the Windermere, the small town where I went to school. And I arranged to have wine with her and her family one night. And I was terrified to go there because truly to talk and to enjoy her company, we would be catching up. And to catch up would mean that I would not probably hide the last 20 years of my life, which happened to involve, you know, a relationship with a woman. So I, throughout the course of the evening, got up the courage to share with her, you know, the truth about me. And she, as I write about, didn't even blink. There was complete acceptance. I think most people that I end up telling, there's relief because I think that they are trying to make me comfortable. So they don't want to, you know, say anything that will make me uncomfortable. So it opens up this new world and this flow. And so that has been my experience with other folks too that I've revealed my story to. It's been of relief and of support, and so I'm very appreciative of that, and lucky that that has been my experience, because I know that that's not everybody's.
Was there a difference between the reason you actually wanted to go through this process, returning to Winemere, and the reason that you wanted to write about it? Could this have all happened if it hadn't been a book?
I think it could have, yes. I think that my same yearnings would have been there. I think that my curiosities would have been there. I happen to be a writer, and so it was definitely a very natural way for me to go on the journey and to process the journey. I think that writing the book has helped me evolve a great deal, both in terms of writing through things and having personal breakthroughs, as well as sharing pieces of the book in progress with different people in my life, in particular my mom, which helped to facilitate dialogue and to break down the walls of our silence. So I think the book did play a big part in making my journey what it was, and it probably would have been very different had I just gone home and spent time with people and not done such a deep reflection.
Well, Melanie Hofford, it's a really moving story, and I wish you best of luck with publication date and in the days beyond.
Thanks, Mitch. I really appreciate being on your show. It's been great.
Melanie Hofford's new memoir is called Prairie Silence, A Rural Expatriate's Journey to Reconcile Home, Love, and Faith. It's just out today. She joined us via Skype from Minnesota, where she works for Teach for America. You can hear more of the conversation and read an excerpt from Prairie Silence at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. One last break, and when we return, one lifelong sports fan discovers that the BCS, the NFL, and the major leagues might just not be the be-all, end-all for watching sports. We'll learn about Tim Forbes' sports journey next on Lake Effect.